Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the Car Talk Plaza Southern Winter Resort here on the beach. That's Carson Beach in South Boston.
That's not far south enough. I told Dougie this was a dumb idea to go build an entire resort here in South Boston. It's cold in South Boston. We should have gone further south.
Oh, I do remember that you were talking about Rhode Island or something, right?
That's it. What's wrong with Rhode Island?
I got a cute letter. Want to hear a cute letter?
Yes.
Dear Tom and Ray, being the devout historians that you are, I was surprised at the answer you gave a couple of weeks ago regarding the meaning of primitive four-wheel drive. Did we give a definition of primitive four-wheel drive? I remember someone said something about primitive. You said it dates back to World War II. I don't remember this either.
No, probably World War I.
But it actually had its origins
Spanish-American War
earlier in the days of the covered wagons. When the pioneers made their great trek across the plains in their prairie schooners, the wheels were often mired in the well-worn ruts of the road.
Of course.
Oxen and horse would strain, but the wagon wouldn't budge. At this point, men would position themselves at each of the four wheels and shin deep in the mud. They would grasp the spokes and push for all they were worth. This is primitive four-wheel drive. Also, as the wagon was freed, the men at the front wheels had to stay out of the way of the protruding hubs on the rear wheels. So the men at the back would yell, "Look out for the hubs." And while these early four-wheel drives did not have lockout hubs, they did have hub lookouts. There are wackos. This particular wacko is named Jay Patterson from New Albany, Indiana.
Anyway, if you'd like to talk to us, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Guys, this is Red Barker from Trenton, New Jersey.
Hey, Red.
Red. Trenton, New Jersey.
Well, listen to this.
Yeah.
Last May, I'm driving around the corner from my house. I've got my daughter in the car, and we see a beautiful, big, baby blue convertible on this lawn.
Yeah.
And it's got a sign in it that says, "Are you ready for summer?" I immediately slam on my brakes, hang a U-turn, jump out of the car, say, "No, I'm not."
A baby blue what convertible?
1975 Pontiac Granville.
Oh, what a car.
A beautiful car with a white leather interior, brand new white top, brand new paint job.
No.
So I buy the car, and I pick up my buddy and his kids and my daughter, and we go on our maiden voyage and smoking a couple of big cigars in front of this car.
You're saying it doesn't get any better than this.
That's right. And the kids are loving it. And then all of a sudden, there's smoke coming up from the floor.
Oh.
So we pull over. The floor of the car bursts into flames.
The carpet, that is.
The carpet. So we stop at the 7-Eleven. We get a gallon of water.
Who says that American cars aren't exciting?
Right.
This would never happen in a Toyota.
Never.
This is the point I've been trying to make all these years. You could drive a Toyota for 100 years. You would never have this kind of excitement. So you run into the convenience store. You get a gallon of water. They charge you a buck for it.
And we proceed to drive home while pouring water on the floor.
This is great.
I love it.
Well, what was on fire anyway?
Well, it turns out that being so old, I guess the floor was rusted through.
Of course.
And there was a tiny little hole. And the catalytic converter, somebody must have ran over something, was pushed up close to the floor. And the heat from that caused the rug to catch on fire.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, that car had to have no floor.
So I take it back to the two brothers who had been fixing the car for 25 years, and I said, "Well, you know, maybe we need a new catalytic converter." I said it looks like it's got holes in it. Nah, you don't need
that. Nah. We'll put a couple of pieces of sheet metal up there and protect the rugs.
Well, first they said we're going to crank it down so it's a further away from the floor, and then we're going to weld a piece of sheet metal under the floor.
Got it.
Okay, so
makes sense to me.
No more fire, but my girlfriend cannot ride in the car seated next to me. She says this car is putting out too much heat.
It's you that's putting out the heat, Red.
So when I drive the car in the summer, she has to sit in the back seat.
Oh, that's no fun.
No. If I wanted to be a chauffeur, I would have got a different job.
Well, the catalytic converter is right under, you know, on that car, if I'm not mistaken, right under where the passenger's feet would be.
Yes, it is.
And while there may be nothing technically wrong with the converter in terms of, you know, holes and such, and it may be far enough away from the floor, I'd be willing to bet the converter is probably plugged up.
Well, it's the original converter. I know that.
I think there are two things going on. I think the converter's no good, and I think the timing is retarded.
Ah, that could be. How's it running?
The car runs great. I had 9 kids in it, taking them to the shore. I had the car in the Elks parade.
Did the Elks like it?
They loved it. They loved it.
Red, what do you do for a living?
I'm a criminal defense attorney.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? And you have a seemingly a pretty good outlook on life. You seem like a happy-go-lucky guy. Or are you just a nut?
He's a criminal lawyer, or is that redundant? Well, you are living the dream, Red.
But I would put a new converter in, but have the ignition timing checked. I bet you over the years they've retarded the timing to make the thing pass some kind of emissions test or whatever. Have them check the timing, put it to spec, put a new converter on there, a new style, honeycomb style converter, and that's going to fix the problem.
Yeah.
Have them install a heat shield too. They can rivet a piece of sheet metal in addition to the floor that they fixed. They can put another piece of sheet metal between the converter and the floor to act as a heat shield, so it will reflect the heat off the converter down to the pavement.
Down instead of up.
All right. But that's not going to interfere with my relationship with my girlfriend.
No.
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
See you, Red.
Thanks, guys.
Enjoy your car.
Bye. Bye.
Are you ready for summer? That's the sign. See, the right marketing.
So when you want to get rid of the dart.
Mm.
No, the sign of the darts is how you're ready for the junkyard.
Are you ready for the junkyard? No, I'm not.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Heidi from Logan, Utah.
Hi, Heidi.
Heidi, Logan.
Yes.
That's a famous place.
It's been my lifelong dream to be on Car Talk.
It has.
No kidding. And to get out of Logan.
That too.
That's the second one.
Right. Yes.
How old are you? Lifelong.
I am 21. I'm a student at Utah State University.
Utah State? USU. Utah State University is USU.
USU, yes.
USU. Is that how you, what do you guys call it there? Utah State.
Yeah. Utah State. That's better than USU.
USU.
Yeah,
that sounds Japanese.
So.
Yeah, go to USU State. Yeah.
What are you majoring in, Heidi?
I am in electrical engineering.
E, huh?
If you call me an E from USU, I don't know. I might hang up on you.
An E from USU. Now, are you learning anything about electricity there in the electrical engineering program at USU?
Well, not yet, but eventually I hope to.
I mean, have they given you, like, Kirchhoff's laws and Ohm's law, all that? Have you learned all that stuff?
That's in about a week.
I think
in about a week?
Yes.
I think Kirchhoff's laws have been negated. They don't work anymore.
Oh, okay. I'll tell my teacher that. The Car Talk guy has told me.
Yeah, Kirchhoff's laws are bull.
What do you mean? I mean, you're 21 years old. I mean, you should be graduating, like, tomorrow.
Oh, yes, but I changed my major and got married and did all sorts of other things.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So.
What, from art history to electrical engineering?
Yeah, no, it was from mathematics to electrical engineering.
No kidding. What is electrical engineering these days?
Well, we make computers,
light bulbs,
design computers, work for Hewlett-Packard,
yeah,
things like that.
Yeah, I mean, or you could work for Sylvania. Redesigning the light bulb.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yes, cool.
All right, we've given you a hard enough time. Maybe we can help you.
Okay. I have this car. It's an 89 Mercury Tracer. I take it on road trips a lot, and I've noticed when I start going up a hill, the check engine light will come on.
Mm.
And a couple times when it started happening, I think, oh, no, my car is going to fall apart. I ought to do something about this. But now I've realized if I just take my foot off the gas for a second and then put my foot back on the gas, the check engine light will go off.
There you go. Okay, well,
thanks for letting us know that. We'll tell the next caller to try the same thing. That's
good.
Well,
this would be fine, except when I'm going up a hill, this car doesn't handle hills very well, and I need to get the momentum to go up the hill. But when I take my foot off the gas, I lose all that momentum, and I start crawling up the hills.
I'm going to guess you have 95,000 miles on this thing.
Up a little more.
195,000.
Yeah, you're closer. Yeah.
I'm closer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got about 200,000.
Does it really?
Yes.
Well, first of all, I don't think I'd be too worried. The check engine light doesn't mean that anything is wrong with the engine. What it means is that this is fuel injected, this vehicle, and it has various sensors that are reading certain things that are going on, like the temperature.
Parameters.
Parameters, yes. We'll call them parameters.
Let's call them parameters.
Actually, we can use that with Heidi because she should be familiar with parameters.
Yes, because she's familiar with that, yeah.
Yes. It's reading various engine parameters, and it's determining what the fuel-air mixture should be under these different circumstances. For example, if the ambient temperature is this or the coolant temperature is that.
And the throttle is 92% open
and the airflow is this and the airflow temperature is this. And if one of those things, it's also reading the exhaust stream. It's reading what's coming out of the engine as it's burning up the gasoline. And if one of those things is off, it'll turn the check engine light on. So it could be that one of your sensors is out of spec. And the one I suspect is the oxygen sensor, which I know you've never changed.
Are you kidding?
It may not even exist anymore. We've taken oxygen sensors out that were practically melted.
Yeah.
But you can have the thing scanned. You can take it into your shop if the thing ever visits a shop. And you can have somebody, and somebody can scan it and figure out what's wrong with it.
Will this cost me money?
Yeah.
Everything costs money.
However, you don't have to worry. If the check engine light goes off when you reach the top of the hill, even if you keep the thing floored, by the time you reach the top, the light's going to go off. Is that not true?
It doesn't. No, it stays on until I take my foot off the gas.
It stays on until you take your foot off the gas. When the engine is idling, you're sitting there waiting for class to start, and
right.
You're sitting in the parking lot, and the engine's running, how much does it shake?
Not a whole lot.
I know what the problem is.
Not a whole lot.
When you're climbing a hill, a steep hill, you have your foot on the gas pedal all the way down, and you never do that any other time.
Right.
That's probably
true. I suspect you have a bad throttle position switch. That's just a guess.
Oh, that's good.
Throttle position switch.
You might be able to duplicate the check engine light by taking the car on a flat road and flooring it. Of course, you might blow the engine up in doing this.
Yeah.
You might. But I suspect if you floor it on a flat road and open that throttle all the way up, just like you do when you're trying to climb a steep hill, the light will come on then, too.
I'll bet it won't.
$50?
Do I get to hold the money?
What was I betting?
Heidi's going
to... Oh, I was betting that it was not going to... That the light is not going
to
come on.
Heidi, you have to call us next week.
Okay.
Get it on a flat surface.
And go ahead.
Drive it with the wide open throttle for a few seconds, and then if it doesn't do it again for a few seconds until the light comes on.
Keep doing it
till the light comes on, Heidi. Keep driving it till the light comes on.
The light won't come on.
And there's money in this for you, Heidi.
Oh, really? Okay. I'll try that tonight, then.
Call us next week. But I'm guessing the TPS, but my gut feeling is the oxygen sensor. But I have to go with the TPS because there's money on it now.
Fine.
Okay.
We'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
See you, Heidi.
Thanks a lot. See you
bye-bye.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And don't listen to that Kirchhoff stuff. You don't need it.
Didn't Kirchhoff's laws have, like, differentials in them?
Oh, I don't think so. Not when you did it.
No?
No.
No, there was a change of current per unit time,
and
all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there were definitely differentials in there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'll have to look it up.
DIDT. I mean, I was current, wasn't it?
T is still time.
T is time. There's definitely DIDT in it.
Isn't
education great?
You know what's even more impressive? How we've retained the stuff after all these years.
I mean, if they brought us back in time, like 50, 60 years, we could invent all this stuff. It has something to do with the IDT, but I don't know what.
If you went back in time 100 years,
you'd be useless.
You'd be hard-pressed to invent a baseball bat.
I wouldn't be able to do anything.
No, you wouldn't. I could as only, much as you know.
They would lock you up because all you could do is to tell them about all the wonderful things that you have seen, and you'd have no idea.
Well, that's why I believe that time travelers do exist, that there are people from the future that have come back, and they all get locked up as being crackpots because they can't do anything either. They say, oh, really? Yeah, you believe we have spaceships that fly around this? They say, oh, yeah. They yeah. Can you make one? No. What does it look like? I can't even draw one. How is it prepared? I don't know. How does it take off? I don't know that. How does it land? I don't know that either.
You press the button.
And you watch it on television. What's that?
And you wish you had paid more attention in that course, but you didn't because you didn't care about it.
Well, I did
pay. And if you went back, you still wouldn't care about it.
No.
I wouldn't.
No, you know what the problem with college education for males is?
Don't get me started on that one.
Well, I just...
Don't get me started!
College education interferes with your social life. At the time in your life when you're most interested in females, what do? They send you to college. What's even worse is sending you to the army. I mean, Jesus, talk about cruel, unusual punishment.
Well.
Okay, you're 18, and now you're interested in girls. The zits have cleared up and the whole bit, and now we're going to send you to the army.
Fort Dix, New Jersey. No. Yeah, or MIT.
Yeah.
Come on, give us a break.
Yeah, no, colleges like MIT are too hard. You don't have any time to develop your social skills, and that's why.
Yeah.
Most of the guys there still have, if you still have zits, they'll admit you. Because they know you're not going to get any girls, right? That's why they want to see you when they do the interview. Oh, you got zits? Okay, you're in. Okay, look, now before we give the answer to last week's puzzle, we have to take a short break so we can go to the little mechanics room.
We'll be right back. The little mechanics room?
You painted a turn.
And even though Rip Van Winkle slaps the snooze button whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the American Jewish World Service, working together for more than 30 years to build a more just and equitable world. Learn more at ajws.org. Support for this podcast and the following message come from K. Buxbaum in support of the David Gilkey and Zabiula Tamana Memorial Fund, established to strengthen NPR's commitment to training and protecting journalists in high-risk environments.
Who was Qasem Soleimani, and what exactly was his role in Iran? This week on Throughline, how the assassinated Iranian general and the organization he represented have shaped the relationship between the U.S. and Iran for decades. That's this week on Throughline from NPR, the podcast where we go back in time to understand the present.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappan Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler, if I can possibly get there.
That was a very long, convoluted.
Is that all you have to say about it? Long?
Obfuscated.
Folkloric?
Interesting.
Historic?
Historic puzzler.
Here it is.
Yeah.
Many, many years ago when I was 23, I was married to a widow who was pretty as can be. This way I had a girl. No. I was engaged in the noble profession of pedagogy. In the frozen state of Vermont, I was teaching science to 7th and 8th graders. And anyway, there I was one Saturday morning sitting in front of my TV watching some educational program. I think it was Mighty Mouse. And the phone rang, and I knew who it was. It was one of my fellow teachers who happened to live across the street. And he was calling to ask me to help him move a cast iron stove into his house. Jeez.
I'm remembering this.
He explained to me that he didn't have the stove. He was going to pick it up at the factory, and he'd be back in a few hours, and then would I help him? And I said, what about that no good brother-in-law of yours? And he said, no, he wasn't due back in town until late that night, and I guess I was it. So I said, oh, go get the stove and call me when you get back. So I got dressed and immediately started engaging in every manner of household activity in the hope that I'd hurt myself.
Or burn your house down.
And I tried everything, like rewiring the house, doing chimney repairs, polishing the gutters. Nothing worked. But as I waited for the dreaded call, a wonderful thing began to happen. The snow that was falling changed to freezing rain, and I said to myself, this could be good. Right now, they're loading the stove into his VW microbus at the factory. But he's never going to get up his steep driveway when he returns, and I'll be off the hook. And maybe by tomorrow, when the ice melts, that no-good brother-in-law will be back, and he won't have to call me. Sure enough, there I am, hiding behind the drapes as he pulls up, and he's slipping and sliding, even with the extra weight of the cast-iron stove in the back. He gets out and throws some sand under the wheels, but of course, what? It doesn't help. He gets out of the van again, slams the door, opens the engine compartment. Remember those buses had a little door in the back?
I remember it well.
He opens the engine compartment, and he does something that takes, like, a second or two. Closes the engine compartment door, and the next thing I know, he's climbed the driveway, and he's on the phone saying, "Hey, babe, come on over and help." The question is, what did he do that literally took a second that enabled him to get up the icy driveway? Now, here's the answer. Believe it or not, his Volkswagen bus...
Yeah, believe was, that's believe it or not.
...was
right.
transmitting too much torque. It's hard to believe. To the wheels to enable him to negotiate this steep, icy grade.
It's like if you're trying to walk on ice...
You can't run.
You can't. I mean, if you tried to run on the ice, you'd be on your butt in 2 seconds. Whereas if you walk very, very slowly...
But he couldn't transmit a small enough amount of power to the wheels to stop from losing his
walk.
Grip. To walk.
That's right.
So what he did is he opened the back and he pulled the coil wire off so the engine wouldn't start. He got back in, and with the thing in first gear, he turned the key. And all that worked now was the electric motor that would ordinarily start the engine, but he was using the electric motor to take him up the driveway in first gear, albeit slowly, but not slowly enough. And he crept up the driveway with just enough torque to get him up without slipping, and there he was at the top.
The equivalent of walking gingerly on the ice so you don't fall on your butt, as opposed to trying to run on the ice where you would fall.
Now, alternatively, he could have pulled a spark plug wire or two or three and made the engine run, for example, on two cylinders. But
maybe he knew that it was already running on two cylinders.
That's exactly why.
He said, well, I guess two's too many.
Anyway.
How about none?
Now that that's over with, who's our winner this week?
The winner this week is Barry Fisher and his students at Eisenhower Middle School in Rockford, Illinois. No kidding. Barry Fisher and in his entire class. Barry probably figured that by putting "and students" in parentheses in his email, we would feel obligated to send him like 25 Car Talk prizes.
Of course.
Well, dream on, Barry. We are sending you 25 $1 gift certificates instead of the usual one $25 gift certificate. Good luck.
Well, you can pool them together and, you know, make $125, or each of the kids can go visit the Shameless Commerce Division and
sure.
buy something of their choosing.
Exactly.
And spend,
for a dollar.
And spend some of their parents' money at the same time. Anyway.
For a dollar. Nada.
Not on our... No. Not with us. Anyway, we'll have a new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show. In the meantime, we'll take your calls at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Lucia from Portage Lake, Maine.
Portage Lake. Wow, is that like way up in the boondocks?
Yeah, you had a caller on that was from Wayne.
Yes, we did. I remember that call.
Oh, Wayne, Maine.
Yeah.
From Wayne, Maine, and you're right near Wayne?
No, we're about 5 hours north of that.
Woof!
We're up there.
You're like in the Arctic Circle someplace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice.
Were you born there, Lucia?
No. No.
Then for what possible reason could you be there?
There are only polar bears in Portage Lake, Maine, I think.
What took you there?
I used to live where you do, in the Boston area, and after several years got kind of tired of it and looked for some peace and quiet and came up here. And certainly it's quiet.
Really? You could have gone to the library. I mean, libraries are peaceful and quiet.
Yeah.
You have to go to Maine?
To the Athenaeum, and that's quiet.
I mean, that's going to be a godforsaken place, isn't it?
Yeah, our population of our town is about 300.
300?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a city boy, so I have never understood the lure of the woods. I've never understood why anyone would want to live in a town of 300 people, but Maybe it's my own...
See, and that's why you, you can't understand hunting and all that stuff.
I cannot understand hunting. No, I can't. And
do
I
you
can't...
hunt, Lucia?
No, no.
Of course not.
No, we just admire the moose and the deer and...
Sure.
Whatever comes by.
So anyway, Lucia, yeah. What's going on and why did you call us?
Well, the woods have something to do with my question.
Great.
I have a Toyota Corolla.
Mm-hmm.
It's a front-wheel drive.
Yes.
We've put a log in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
And we with the, so much snow and ice up here, hoping to weigh down the car. But because it's front-wheel drive and the log is in the trunk in the back.
It's not doing much.
It's not, huh?
Well, no. Oh, you want it? You no.
Well,
I thought.
I'm wondering, is it helping or is it hurting any of the?
It's probably making things worse.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, think of the car as being sort of like a plank, and the plank is resting on a couple of say sawhorses.
Fulcra.
Yeah. Two fulcrums.
Okay. A seesaw with two fulcrums.
Right.
Being your axles.
Uh-huh. Right.
So if you put a heavy weight behind the back wheels, which you did.
Or even near the back wheels.
Then what you're doing is you're pushing down on the back, which is going to make the front go up. And even if the front doesn't visibly go up, the weight on the front wheels is less. And because the weight on the front wheels is less, the traction is less, and you get lousier traction than you would if you didn't have the log. You got to strap that log to the hood.
Somebody's going to write to you and tell you that you're nuts.
Well, if it's anyone other than Laszlo Tisza, I don't want to hear it. Laszlo Tisza was my college physics professor. And he's the only one who would be the definitive word on this.
So basically what you're telling Lucia is she puts a heavy weight in the trunk and it makes the car lighter.
It makes the car lighter.
Is that what it is?
That's basically it.
Okay.
I mean, if you think about the extreme case, if you took a giant and had him step on the rear bumper, the front wheels would come off the ground. Right?
It helped the fishtailing, but it does really feel, you really do feel a pull in the car.
No, I think I'm absolutely right
on
this one.
Unfortunately, living in godforsaken lake up there, wherever you are,
it's not godforsaken lake, it's Portage Lake.
Oh, something like, I'm sorry. You can't get by with just crummy old two-wheel drive either. You need something massive. You need a Toyota Land Cruiser.
Absolutely.
That's what you need.
There's absolutely no question about it in my mind.
Yeah.
You need a Toyota Land Cruiser, four-wheel drive, big, strong, and that's it. So take the log out of the trunk, but unless it really is helping you with the fishtailing.
Well,
not enough.
Because the effect on the traction might be quite minimal. Because if the log weighs, what, 50 pounds?
No, 150.
150.
Yeah.
How'd you get it in there?
Not me. My husband.
Husband.
Good luck getting it out.
Yeah, I know.
You'll have to sell the car with that in it.
I did that one time. I put some big monstrous heavy thing in the trunk of my car to get traction like this.
Yeah.
And it was wet, and it froze to the floor of the trunk, and I could never get it out until the summer.
Everything's frozen up here. That's real possible.
Yeah. Hey, good luck, Lucia. Leave the log there unless you find out that you can't go anymore. If you get stuck in snow, take the log out. Otherwise, it's probably not doing much harm.
Thank you.
See you later.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys.
Hello, who's this?
My name's Trent Blankenship. I'm calling from Du Bois, Wyoming.
Trent. Oh, I thought it was like tire tread.
I've been in Du Bois.
Du Bois, Wyoming.
Wyoming. Except
it's south of Yellowstone Park.
Yes, I know exactly where it is. In fact, we called it Dubois. Which is, the proper pronunciation.
Well, that's if you happen to be French. What, did you get foreign accent syndrome when you were there? Where were you? In the heart of America. It's Dubois, man.
My wife is French, and she said pronounced Dubois.
Yeah,
but Ian Tyson pronounces it Dubois.
Does Trent.
And so does Trent.
And Dubois, he lives there.
Dubois is good enough. I bought an alarm clock there at the hardware store, and it was off by 12 hours.
That's pretty close.
Every day. Anyway, what's up?
Oh, I have a van that had a stroke.
Your van?
Yeah. My whole left side of it, or wait a minute, the right side of it. Well, it depends which way you look at it.
The right side is paralyzed. Driver's side?
No, passenger side.
Passenger side. That's the left right side.
The passenger side is the right side.
Right, and it's a Ford Aerostar van, and the light and the window motor and the taillight all went out on it.
Huh.
Really?
Isn't that weird?
The headlight?
What light?
The headlight, the blinker light, the window motor, and the rear taillight.
All at the same time?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I don't know.
I mean,
did you check your fuses?
Yeah, I redid all of them.
And nothing, huh?
No. Well, no, not really.
Well, give us the well. What do you mean, well, well?
Well, then I went through and replaced bulbs and things like that.
Yeah.
And I got everything working with the window motor.
Ah. So, you were going to leave out that little piece of information? Come on, John. Geez. Give us a break.
I mean, why did it go out?
I mean, you assume that they were all tied together. I mean, it's difficult with the limited abilities that we have to come up with the right answers. But when our callers obfuscate the questions.
And lie. I mean, this is outright lying. But you're right. It's interesting, though, because the headlight may have gone out. And you didn't notice it. The taillight, you would never have noticed it. And what you noticed was what the window wouldn't go down.
Right.
And then you look around, you say, oh, my God, the left tail, the right side headlight and the right side taillight, fuse.
Right. What you were looking for, Trent, was continuity.
Yeah.
Not electrical continuity. You were looking for spiritual continuity. you were looking for, you a lawyer?
No.
Oh, I was just checking.
Well, the fact that you lied to us made us suspicious.
I didn't lie to you. I obfuscated things.
You obfuscated.
Same thing.
So now all that doesn't work is the passenger side window.
Yeah.
Is that true? And it works from neither
no,
switch?
No, I still can't get the taillight to blink.
That's another problem.
Yeah.
That may be another problem.
But the right side window has a switch on the door, on the right side door. It doesn't work from there. Does it work from the other switch?
No.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, it could obviously be the motor is gone.
Yeah.
It could be a connection to the motor.
Or it could be the harness that goes from the door pillar into the door. You know, there's that harness that passes the electricity.
From the front there?
Yeah, it passes electricity into the door to operate the power door lock and the power window. After you've opened that door a jillion times, that wire can break.
Okay.
So you could have a broken wire. You're going to have to take it apart.
Did it happen all of a sudden, or did it start getting slower
and slower? All electrical failures
all
of a sudden.
I came back from Germany.
Yeah.
And it was on the boat, you know, and then I got it off the boat, and I drove it, and the whole right side went out.
They probably dropped it when they were loading it.
Well, I use this as an excuse to go buy a brand new Suburban, and now my wife is mad at me.
Isn't that great, though, a Suburban?
Yeah, it's way better than the van, but I got to fix this thing to sell it.
Yeah, well, I mean, are you going to do it yourself?
Well, I don't know.
You said you replaced the bulb in the back?
Yeah.
And you replaced the directional bulb, because there are different bulbs. There's one for the tail light. There's one for the brake light. Isn't there?
Well, it's just one big piece. Yeah.
But there were several bulbs back there.
Right,
You could have a bad bulb. You could have a bad connection in the socket. You could have a bad flasher. Sometimes the flasher will work on one side but not the other. Don't ask me why. I don't know why.
Okay.
So you might try those things.
Okay.
And some nice, quiet Sunday morning when you got nothing to do, take off the door panel.
Okay.
You'll see the motor there.
Okay.
Get your jumper cables.
Jumper cables?
Well, not jumper cables.
Yeah.
You need test, you know, you need a light.
No, a jumper cable. Trust me on this one.
Oh, okay. I don't trust you.
You're gonna run the jumper cable from the positive terminal of the battery right to the motor.
Okay.
Right to the connection on the motor and
12
see if
volts, straight
12
across.
Volts right to it, man. Zap.
Okay.
And see
when
if
it starts
works.
Smoking.
Yeah. Don't worry about the smoke.
Then my wife will really be mad at me.
No, don't worry about the smoke.
If it starts smoking, just put the door panel on and sell it as is.
Now, if the motor is okay, it will run. The window will go up or down or whatever it has to do.
Okay.
And if it doesn't run, then it means that you got other troubles.
Well, it means you need a motor if it doesn't.
Well, I'll just sell it as is.
Just sell it
as is.
No,
I mean, exactly.
The other window works, right?
But now, I mean, as long as you have it off, if you got the door panel off, you could pop right down to your local Ford dealer, pick up a motor, and zap it right in there. It's relatively easy to do.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't listen to him.
You can do it. Come on, this guy's from Du Bois, man.
Yeah, that's no problem.
You can do anything.
Hey, next time you're through, Du Bois, stop.
We did stop, but last time we were through.
Yeah, you bought a clock, you know.
I'll sell you a van.
Want to buy a van? You bought the bad clock.
See you later, Trent.
Thanks.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye. Hey, look, are you ready to take another break?
Ready. I was ready hours ago.
Well, I hate to break it to you. So was the audience.
All right. Well, when we come back, are you going to regale us with a great new puzzler?
I'm not sure I'd say great.
All right, a good new puzzler?
Let's just say that when we come back, I'll have a perfectly adequate new puzzle. Is that good enough for you?
That's great, yeah.
It'll do, right? It'll do. It'll do. Let's put it that way.
All right. What's it about?
You want to know everything? You're a pain.
No, I mean, it's just, you help us out.
It's about words.
Words. I can hardly wait. Okay, we'll be back with the new word puzzler and more of your calls in just a minute, so please stay tuned.
Hands glued to the steering wheel, smack between a ledge straight down and a waltz, bruise as thick as thieves. And as sure as a sharp corner comes, a jackknife kind of creepiness sweeps up and over.
And even though little old ladies stomp on their miracle ears whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, where opportunity takes root. More information is available at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
Hey, Gene.
What's good?
You know we probably shouldn't be friends.
Why are you trying to hurt my feelings?
I mean, statistically speaking, most adults don't have a single friend of a different race.
As it happens, on the next episode of NPR's Code Switch, we're talking about making and maintaining friendships across racial lines.
Listen and subscribe.
We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the new word puzzler, as I promised.
Yes, which has to do with words.
Generally. And
it's
and this
difficult
was,
to give a puzzler without words.
And this was sent in recently, well, last year, by a fellow named Bob Dinger. And I'm not even going to mess around with it.
No, just go right to it.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to give you a list of words.
I'm going to write them down.
You can, yes, get a pencil, write them down.
I got the pencil.
Each and every word in this list I'm going to give you.
What do they get? It says each.
Oh, jeez.
All right, I'm sorry.
Has the same unusual uniqueness in common. Okay?
Okay.
Here are the words.
Yeah.
Assess.
Yeah.
Banana.
Huh?
Dresser. Grammar. Potato. Revive. Uneven. And voodoo.
What's that?
Voodoo.
Voodoo.
V-O-O-D-O-O. Voodoo.
So each of these...
Like I have a voodoo doll of you that I stick pins in to every day.
So all these words have the same
thing.
The same thing that's peculiar about them.
Exactly. Okay, I'll read the list.
Wow.
Again. You ready?
Yeah.
Assess. Banana. Dresser. Grammar. Potato. Revive, uneven, and voodoo.
Very good.
And I suppose if I had to give a hint of any kind.
Oh, I don't know if you should. It's so impossible now.
Then I won't give a hint.
No, give us a hint.
Well, the hint I'll give you is this.
Yeah.
If I left one of the words off the list, it wouldn't affect the answer.
That's a lousy hint.
Well, of course. If it were any good, it would help. Anyway, if you think you know the answer, write it on the inside pocket of a size 44 Overland McKinley shearling jacket made of fine Spanish merino shearling, hand-buffed in Italy, with heavy-duty zipper, four-button storm flap, and battery-powered in-pocket hand warmers. And send it before the work is over to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238.
Or you could email us your answer from cartalk.com.
But if you have a question or an answer right now, give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Josie from Boise.
Josie from Boise. We have an aunt, Josie.
Aunt, an aunt.
Aunt. I was just discussing the pronunciation of A-U-N-T. I guess aunt is an Eastern kind of pronunciation.
Yeah.
My wife thinks it's a la-di-da. She says, do you say tomato? And I say, no, I don't.
No, but what do you call those things that make colonies underground that carry stuff away, like, you know, if you're at a picnic and they come and carry away your sandwich?
Ants.
Ants.
And how, so why should A-N-T be pronounced the same as A-U-N-T is our rationale here.
I've got a lot of ants, though, so they kind of make a colony.
He's a wise guy. I knew it. So what do you want, Josie?
Josie from Boise.
My problem is my husband and I just recently inherited a 1971 Volkswagen Westphalia from my father. And the car has a problem of starting by itself and driving away. It's never happened to my father, but it's happened to my husband and I 4 times. The first time it happened, we came out of a swimming pool, and it had jumped a meridian, and it was in an intersection.
Did it actually start, or did it just drive away?
No, it starts up. It goes...
But the engine doesn't necessarily run.
Not necessarily.
And this is a stick shift car.
It is.
So if you left it neutral, it wouldn't go anyplace.
That's our new trick.
There you go.
Yeah, have you tried tying it to a building?
Yeah, be careful what you tie it to, though. Wait, when you say inherited from your father?
Yes.
Literally inherited? Did your father die?
No.
He's still alive.
He's still alive.
He just wanted to live a little longer.
That's why he gave the car to you.
He wanted an RV instead of a van.
Ah, okay.
So, and I wanted the van.
And it's a 71.
Yeah.
That's old.
Yeah, it's nice, but it's only had one owner.
Well, you're doing the right thing by leaving it in neutral. I hope your handbrake works.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Well, if you're not, you're going to have some other kind of disaster in your hands.
So, first of all, it wouldn't really start. That's why we were confused a little bit, because it can crank by itself, but it won't start unless the key is in the on position, I think.
Or unless the...
Unless you got some serious stuff going on.
Is getting energized, and that isn't the case. I'm going to guess that you have a bad starter motor.
Okay.
And I think that would be the first thing. I mean, no one's going to figure this out unless they can actually get it to do it.
Uh-huh.
And it does it so infrequently that you may have to leave it for someone for the entire summer.
Yeah.
In which case, you're going to miss your vacation with it. So I would take a stab and have a starter put in it.
Okay.
How often does it happen?
Not very often. It's very random.
Have you ever noticed that it's more likely to happen if you're parked facing in one direction or another, or uphill,
up
downhill?
Up a hill or down a hill?
No, but, you know, it happens in the heat of the summer.
Oh!
And
oh,
it
that's
happens
good.
At 6,000 feet elevation.
That's a very, very good answer.
Yeah, the heat of the summer I like, and I'm really feeling strongly about the starter motor.
Okay.
Yeah, because things, when in the heat, what? Expand.
Right.
We know that.
Okay.
So the starter motor is getting bigger, and that's why it's starting up.
Okay.
I don't know, but I think it's worth a shot.
All right.
Try it out. It's only a few
Well,
bucks.
Something is expanding and making electrical contact, which is making the starter crank.
Yeah, I think what you have is a bad solenoid, which when you buy the starter will also get replaced.
Okay.
See you, Josie.
Thank you.
Send us a postcard from the Grand Canyon, but don't park too near the canyon.
Yeah.
See you later.
Face the other way. Thanks for calling.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
My name's Scott from Toledo, Ohio.
Hi, Scott.
How you doing?
Oh, great.
How's everything
what's going
in
on in Toledo? Anything exciting?
It is cold and just... same as it always is.
Cold and dreary.
Exactly, gray.
Great. Well, you've brightened up our day.
Try to be here.
So how can we help you?
I have no heat. It's cold.
Oh.
I don't know. I changed the thermostat.
Do you have a Honda?
No, it's a 92 Ford Ranger. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
92 Ranger.
I got the new thermostat in, got back in it, and... filled it up with antifreeze, turned it on, seeing if the thermostat would open and the antifreeze would drop. It did not. I took it for a drive. It still didn't drop. I was wondering if I could take the thermostat out and run it without one for the winter.
Then you'd really have
no that
heat.
Would defeat the purpose.
Okay.
You want it the other way around.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, is this thermostat located in the bottom radiator hose? I mean, is that where this thing is?
Yes, I believe.
Yeah, it's underneath.
Right.
It's most thermostats for about 1,000 years, or maybe even since pharaonic times, have been located on the top of the engine.
Pharaonic times? What's that mean?
Pharaohs.
Oh, pharaonic. Yeah,
but the thermostat on this thing
that
I
was
believe,
when a 56 Chevy was really a 56 Chevy.
So this thermostat is on connected to the bottom radiator hose.
Correct.
And you have to bleed the system of air, and that is not easy to do.
Okay.
Because you have to run this thing until both hoses, that is the top radiator hose and the lower one, are hot.
Okay.
And I bet you, dollars to donuts, that if you were to run this thing for even a half an hour now, only the top hose would be hot and the bottom one would be ice cold. And what that tells me is that coolant has not circulated through the whole system because it's bound up with air.
Okay.
And the heater core is bound up with air, too.
Okay. Is this something I shouldn't mess with?
Well, you
can do this.
You could do it. I mean, what you have to do is sit there with the engine running and a funnel in the radiator. You know, take the radiator cap off, and you put a big funnel in there, and you have a gallon of antifreeze at the ready. And you're going to just keep adding the stuff to it. And as you do that, you'll see bubbles of air come up.
Right. Okay. And the level will drop down a little bit. You add a little bit more. The level drops down a little more.
And you'll know you're done.
And 5 hours later.
This is with both hoses off, correct?
No, they're both on. Everything's hooked up.
Everything's hooked up, and the engine is actually running.
Okay.
And you're going to just add the coolant, you know, in little shots.
Right.
If you have a funnel with a flexible neck on it,
okay,
that would be helpful. Okay, and or you can take it someplace and have it done. I'm sensing that you're not up for this, but you went and did the thermostat. You did the hard part.
Yeah, that was a pain in the neck.
Well, this is easy. I mean, this is just time consuming. You just stand there on a nice cold day in Toledo.
That's when I changed my thermostat.
Exactly.
And yeah, I'd take it someplace.
Tell them
you changed the thermostat, but the system is airbound, and what's happened too is that there's air in the heater.
Okay.
And if there's air in the heater, you'll never get heat in the car.
You have to
get nice, hot coolant circulating into that thing.
Okay.
Good luck, Scott.
Thank you very much.
Good luck. Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-882-7285.
Whatever. Any combination of 8s and 5s.
Yeah.
And so sprinkling a 2 here and there, and we'll answer the phone.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Gladys, and I live in Clinton Corners, and I don't have any car trouble. I need your advice.
Where's Clinton Corners, Gladys? What state?
New York.
New York.
Yeah, I'm not far from Taconic Parkway.
Oh, the Laconic Parkway. Yeah, we've been there.
So what's the problem, Glad?
Well, for Christmas, I got an engine starter. And I heard wonderful things about them. I don't have a garage, and I'm not that young. And I thought, gee, I can warm the car up before I go out. Now I hear horror stories that they ruin your electrical system and you don't have a warranty anymore. And I'm leaving for Florida, and I'm scared to death that this thing, I don't have it put in.
Well, if you're leaving for Florida, are you taking the car with you to Florida?
Yep.
You're not going to need the engine starter in Florida.
No, I know. That's why I decided I'm waiting till I come back and I'll have it put in then. But I just live in fear of breaking down.
What Gladys is talking about, a few other people may not know, is a remote starter. You can attach this device and all the accoutrements to the engine. And from inside the house on those cold winter days when the snow is coming down, you press a little button and the car starts.
Doesn't that sound wonderful?
And by the time you get down there 15 minutes later, everything has melted, the seats are heated, your tush is warm.
Right, there are buds on the trees.
Buds on the trees. Flowers are growing in the back seat. The little babbling brook, or the babbling brother, is babbling.
Well, I'm not a big fan of these, and I will tell you that...
Well, don't forget that 25 years ago, you and I worked on the design of one of these. We were hot. We thought this was the idea of the century.
Well, we thought this was a big deal for people that lived in the city. We called it the Manhattan Project. our timing was a little...
timing was a little off.
My car's going
to
blow up.
And the reason I don't like them... number one is, I mean, first and foremost, I think it's, as a people, it's making us soft.
Yeah.
Well, I'm old. I don't.
Well, that's all right.
You're tough, though, Gladys. You're gonna, I can tell.
Yeah, you're gonna spend 6 months living in a yurt in Tuvaniska. and then, you know, milking yaks at 5 a.m. And you'll be dying to go out and start your car in a cold winter morning. We don't know what tough is. So I'm opposed to it on that. But more than that, or as much as that, at least, I'm opposed to it on the grounds that if you're not there when your car is running and something happens, you won't know enough to shut it off. Let's say, for example, that you were low on oil,
mm-hmm.
but you were inside the house, you know, making a cup of tea while your engine was running.
Right.
And you could easily ruin the engine.
Oh.
Yeah, oh. Whereas if you were in the car with it running, and the oil light came on, you would know enough to shut it off. So that's why I don't like it.
Right. But no big mechanical mess-ups with my car if I have it put in?
No,
right?
It's not going to, you know, assuming it's done correctly.
Uh-huh.
It's not going to mess up the car. I mean, there are various...
But there have been some stories that you've heard, and I've heard too, that incorrectly installed, weird, crazy things can happen.
Like the car can continue to try to start itself.
Right.
In which case, it might chew up the starter motor.
One girl told me they put it in, and it was too powerful for her car, and it blew everything up in her car.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know. My guess is most of these failures...
Uh-huh.
Are due to faulty installation.
Okay.
I think if you really wanted to have one,
yeah,
you should go to someone who does nothing but this or who specializes in it.
Okay.
And I wouldn't trust it to Dave. Dave is your regular mechanic.
No, Mike.
Or as Larry Moore.
As good a guy as he may be, if he hasn't done these, uh-huh, you don't want him to learn on your car,
right,
Gladys.
Okay.
So I would go probably to a company that installs alarm systems.
All right.
And ask, mm-hmm, if they'll install this thing. And if they say, oh, they gave you the Cadillac of remote starters.
That's what this is.
Well, if it's
deluxe.
If it's a deluxe version, they'll put it in for you for a nominal fee of a few hundred bucks.
Uh-huh.
And you'll be on your way. And you can even start the thing from Florida.
That's right.
Yeah, when the plane's going to land, you can start the car at the airport. It'll be running for you.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah, I think it'll be okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. You answered my question. I don't mind getting soft and old. I just want a nice warm car when I go out.
I hope
have a wonderful time.
Hope you're living it up like Wayne Newton. Enjoy yourself.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy, Frogman Berman. Our associate producers are David the Calves of Belleville Green and Catherine Frau Blucher Fenelosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Bridgeford. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from his triumph at the Greater Natchez Chili Dog Derby, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our document security expert from the island of Jamaica is Euripides Upman.
Hey!
Who is not related to
our
tailor. He hasn't
been around for ages.
Euripides Imenides.
What is it?
Or to our staff bouncer, Euripides, I break your face. Or to the proprietor of our men's clothing shop, Euripides, you own a these. Our divorce attorney is Carmine, not yours. Our staff chaperone is Teresa Crowd. Our meteorologist from the New Delhi office is Luke Aurovindo. Our director of Pavlovian research is Isabel Ringing. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. The banker at Car Talk Poker Games is Nikolai Putin. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the shivering comparative religion professors in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And above all, don't drive like Tommy.
And don't drive like Ramey.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 2004. Subscribe to our weekly podcast and check out our mildly offensive clothing and best of collections all over at cartalk.com. Also this week at cartalk.com, we're here to help you clean up your driveway. Got a car that's long in the grill? The Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program will tow it away for free and send the proceeds to your favorite NPR station. It's the good deed you've been looking for to help justify that new Lexus. Turn your car into the programs you love. Find out how at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Scott Simon makes a note to start working on his unicycle act again whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.